How does it finally feel to have an actual, well, you're not on Twitter, but my Twitter followers that get this joke. How does it feel to be a cybersecurity?
Like when we get those tickets in the queue, it can seem overwhelming a bit, but like once I go through it, say it's like something like completely brand new that I probably never even thought of. Like y'all threat actors, y'all listen, y'all, how y'all be moving around, y'all be doing y'all work? Listen, man, y'all keep me on my toes. I feel like this is a role and an opportunity where I could completely apply myself, and I feel like I'm getting the best out of myself. It's not like I'm going in here and just doing something, you know, very remedial, something that anybody else could do. Like I really feel like, you know, I'm making a difference. I'm learning things at a pace and doing things that like a lot of people obviously want to do, but not a lot of people can do.
This video is being brought to you by Level Up in Tech. It's Q3 in 2024, but you still have time to get into the cloud. With the quick search for cloud in Indeed, you can see over 44,000 jobs are listed that is related or pertaining to the cloud. Now, that is a lot, but if you're watching this right now, you might be thinking, well, how do I learn the skills to get into the cloud? Well, we got you covered. Level Up in Tech is one of the best, if not the best, program related to getting people into the cloud. At Level Up in Tech, you can learn about server config and troubleshooting, the AWS cloud, infrastructure as code, CI/CD, scripting, containerization, and more. And also, they now also have a new multi-cloud AI engineering program that is dedicated to help you have the latest and greatest skills to help you be marketable in this tech market. They post more testimonials than almost any program that I could think of. Check them out. Now, if you're ready to start your cloud career today, then use the link in my description to go to levelupintech.com/tech so you can start your career. And plus, they'll know that I sent you. But on to the video.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And I got another lovely episode for y'all today. We got a special guest, also a former client of mine, none other than Mr. Joshua Addison. He came here from Houston to come rock out with us today. So without further ado, Josh, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Drive wasn't that bad. Been chilling here. Really like Dallas. The downtown city here is Dallas, really nice. And been enjoying it ever since I got here yesterday.
Yeah, that's what we tell like a lot of people. Now, I'll tell you, Houston is good for the culture. You're going to see more of us. Mm-hmm. But if you want more city professional vibe, it's Dallas.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And definitely the different, like, how you say this, like Fourth Ward for being like its own city, Arlington and Dallas. Like, I kind of like you said, like, it's more corporate than it is Houston, even though like Houston does have like a corporate thing, but it's more so of like gas and oil and healthcare.
Yeah. Healthcare, gas and oil. Like, I know one of my other clients, he is working for Shell right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he got a security job working for Shell. I don't know if it's a sock roll or whatever. I got to actually touch base with him to see how that was going. But, man, I want you to go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience, and then we will get into the discussion.
Okay, no problem. All right, so he already introduced me, but I'm going to say again, my name is Joshua Addison. I'm from Miami, Florida, a.k.a. Dade County, a.k.a. the Crib. Grew up, born and raised in Miami. Played football, did a lot of different activities there, mess around with computers, video games, and all that other stuff. After I graduated high school from Miami Central, I went to Florida. I graduated from Florida A&M University with my Bachelor of Science of Information Technology with concentration of cybersecurity and mobile programming.
Cool. I briefly do want to touch on two things. On one, you said the crib. And you know that, what was that, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Nightcap was out here at the House of Blues.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to go see that in person. So that was pretty fun.
You guys see Ocho?
Yeah, Ocho.
Yeah, yeah. Man, he's a career legend.
Well, I also went to see it too because eventually stuff like this, I want to do some stuff live. So I actually kind of got a flow like what they did, had a little DJ out there. Mm-hmm. They brought out like different guests within it. So that way like the show could be X amount of time long. So I definitely got some ideas on how to do that. And I know I'm planning to go on a tour. I don't know if it's going to be a 3-city tour, 4-city tour.
Oh, that's what's up.
I'm just going to have to kind of like plan it, scope it out, see who's all interested. Anyway, but that's a different story. So I'm assuming you play what, O-line high school?
Yeah, I play O-line. At that time, I was playing guard.
Okay. Did you ever, like, go both ways or just strictly O-line?
No, just strictly O-line.
Just, like, blocking?
Yeah.
Run blocking or just pass blocking?
Run blocking. Run blocking was better. I played with Dalvin Cook and the other running back, Joseph Yeri. He went to the University of Miami, and, man, we was killing people in high school. You know, we was anybody from Miami know, like, from that 2011 to 2014 when we graduated, we was killing everybody, you know, running the ball. So,
yeah
we held it down. So, I'm definitely more of enjoy run blocking than do pass pro, but, yeah.
That's cool. What's your so you a Dolphins fan too?
Yeah, I'm a Dolphins fan, unfortunately. I'm a Canes fan. I'm a Miami Heat fan. And, you know, sometimes I watch the Marlins if I'm bored or whatever. But, you know, I'm strictly, like, 100% crib all the way.
Yeah, I've been seeing some people trying to make the Dolphins call Denver to get Zach Wilson.
Yeah. Because, unfortunately, with that situation with Tua and his concussions, you know, obviously he's going to try to play. He's going to try to do what he want to do. And, you know, I can't tell no man what he can't do. But I know that,
man, he needs to do the Andrew look and
just put it
retire
up.
Retire, and he already kind of like, he not small, but he is kind of like small.
Yeah.
And he get hurt too easy. Like, he's just, you know, ain't nobody going to get mad at nobody for looking out for themselves past football.
Yeah. And he's not, and the crazy thing is he's not as elusive as like Andrew Luck was either. So that's also another thing. Like, you know, he kind of sit in the pocket more. You know, everything with his throws and everything is more time-based than it is actually sitting and read. So, you know, it's just, yeah, I completely agree.
Man, so now we get into, you went to FAMU.
Mm-hmm.
And, y'all, I'm asking questions like I didn't do his resume, but I forgot. And did you major in, like, computer science, CIS?
So I majored in information technology.
Okay, same thing as CIS.
Yeah. So I majored in information technology. I got the FAM 2014. It was a lot playing football and also studying information technology, because a lot of classes, including like, you know, C++ programming, computer literacy, networking, and, you know, also some computer science and cybersecurity classes. You know, it was kind of difficult finding a balance at first of, like, you know, knowing what's the best time to take certain classes, and also what's the best time to, like, okay, I need to focus up on football and everything else. So,
yeah, because what I'm going to get to is, of course, you already said that's hard, but after, I guess, going through school, like finishing school, I guess, let me see. I know when I'm going to edit, I know what I'm going to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
When you were at school, did you think that you were possibly going to go pro, or you just like, hey, I got a scholarship and I'm just happy I got a scholarship and I'm going to get my degree?
Okay. So for me, be honest, the first 2 years, yeah, I was like, had like a real ambition to go pro. Coming from an HBCU level, it is very difficult, but it's not possible. But the way to do it, you know, you got to have a lot of film. You got a lot of film. You got to have the accolades. You got to go to the Senior Bowl, NFL Combine. Like, you have to do a lot to get drafted. So kind of like after like my second, when I got to my third and fourth year, I kind of lean more towards of, you know, I'm studying IT. It's a profitable field. It's going to be something sufficient for me. And also, you know, I'm going to school for free. I don't have to worry about, you know, paying back these high interest loans. So let me focus on school and take advantage of the opportunity that I was given.
Okay. And I asked that because I went to high school with certain guys, dogs, straight dogs, football. Mm-hmm. Then college and then paying out. And so a lot of them are kind of just not knowing what's next for their career, because they always envision themselves as, I'm going to play ball.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, or let me say, I'm pretty sure you do know some guys like from school. Like, do you know anybody that's currently like still dealing with like life after ball and like they just really still trying to find themselves?
Not right now, but I do have to admit, like the first couple of years, I did knew like a lot of guys who was kind of like in that adjustment period, trying to figure out, you know, what to do after not going to the league, taking, you know, different odd jobs, having to just figure out what's next for them. While me, you know, it was different for me after I graduated from FAMU, you know, 2 months later, I moved to Atlanta for my first corporate role. So, yeah, it was I did see like a lot of that going on with a lot of guys I graduated with and who I was hanging around with, but they was able to get things together and now they kind of like in their career and progressing.
Okay, that's good. That's good because yeah, that's like that tough thing. Like a lot of just any type of athlete, I'll say this because now I do finally have a son and
congratulations,
appreciate it. Like I said, he only 2 months so. For me, I said, I'll introduce him to stuff and see what he like, but I'm only going to push him if I see he's like very talented in something. Because that's what I think a lot of parents make that mistake when it comes to sports. You know when your son's a dog and when they ain't. Now, granted, if you got the money and resources, you can just put in the work to where they turn into one. Mm-hmm. Some kids has got it naturally.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm just going to see how they take to it, what different things they like. And then at home, of course, they're going to see me on the computer, all these other things. So I'm just going to show them a different route to do whatever they want to do. Like, okay, look, hey, if you want to do this, we got to wake up every day for school, 4 or 5. Like, we got to run miles up to school. Like, you got to stand out from everybody. So whenever they sleeping, you got to work. I say, if this is what you want to get to, this is what we got to do. If you don't want to do that, we can do the same thing at home, but you ain't got to go run.
Yeah.
You can be on a computer. You can know how to do all this stuff by college where maybe you got an internship going into your freshman year, or maybe you're working for me or doing all these other things that when you start bumping elbows at these different people in corporate and these people that have a lot of money and starting startups and businesses, you'll find out like their kids have already been coding. They've been doing all these other things while unfortunately I got to find it. It was a stat sheet, and it showed the incomes of, like, people based off race. Like, the I want to say family income. And, of course, black people was towards the bottom. And the guy who shared it on my story, he's in tech as well. He said, guess what race focuses on kids getting the STEM? Guess what race focuses on kids playing sports? And so that's, like, one of those big ones. It's, like, people have to be honest with their kids and do the numbers, the probability of you being very good. Hopefully getting a scholarship, either going to the combine, getting drafted, or going undrafted. Very high. Like my cousin, her husband, he went undrafted. He I think it's probably freshman year of school, might have been like 2012 or 2013. But anyway, he went undrafted out of Houston. And then he played for the Bengals for a couple of years, and then I think it's last year. I think he either played for the Colts or he's on practice squad because he got hurt over there.
Yeah.
But he was a freaking phenomenal athlete, good return man, and then I think he was playing safety. So a lot of times, like you said, if you ain't got that going on and you're not D1, it's different. Now, granted, I will say this, and you could probably tell me your thoughts on this because I got my thoughts on it. People was mad at Prime them because, you know, they left SWAC, but they brought so much more exposure to it that you still see – a lot more SWAT games on ESPN now.
It's on ESPN Plus.
Right, so now them kids getting better looks. So it's like they can hate it or love it, but we all know most of the time, if we're going to be honest, at our schools, the administration stuff, they never doing what they supposed to do with that money. And that was the biggest thing about it. So, hey, I know for a fact, we brought all this economic growth to this school. Like, y'all have to do right by these funds when people come here to see us.
Okay. I would say that is something that I feel like a lot of schools are getting better at, handling money and handling the growth of their campuses and schools. One thing I can say about with FAMU is that we have definitely grown. Like, we have gotten in, they upgraded the stadium. We got upgraded the stadium. They applied turf. They have a new weight room, new locker room. They also building new dorms on campus, and FAMU looks completely different. Even though I've been gone for almost 10 years, FAMU looks completely different. And it's more modern, up to date than what, you know, probably what most people typically see at HBCUs. So I do want to say that schools are definitely getting better at the money management and, you know, investing more into their campuses. But there, you know, there always will be issues with money, especially, you know, since that we already typically don't receive a ton of money from the states that, you know, a lot of HBCUs are located in as well, you know. So the disclosure that Dion was able to give historical black colleges, it definitely did help. We were talked about, we were put on TV, especially from like a lot of different podcasters and a lot of different former pro players. I think the only thing that I dislike about it after Dion left is that you didn't see that anymore. Now, granted, yes, a lot of our games are on ESPN Plus, but, you know, the kind of like the support that we have from, like, you know, different celebrities, different former players kind of, you know, left after that instead of just, you know, staying and helping, you know, pick it back up. But one thing I do want to say that obviously with FAMU, you know, we have, you know, sponsorship by LeBron James and Will Packer and like a whole bunch of other, you know, celebrities and also wealthy people who want to invest in our school. That's not typically the case for a lot of historical black colleges as well. You know, a lot of historical black colleges don't receive that type of funding from celebrities or like other people of wealth to help grow and produce the school. So I definitely want to say that it's definitely something that needs to be done by the state too as well to make sure that we receive our funds so we could grow the campuses and, you know, handle it better. But you know, the mismanagement of money definitely is something that needs to be fixed internally as well too.
Yeah, and then we'll get off the top after this. And I wanted your thoughts on that, you being an alumni.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of some people that have questions have been like, you know, why isn't the alumni giving back, you know, $1 or $10, however much, you know, a year to help keep the funding up? Because I think that's one of those issues too. People will go out and say, oh, HBCUs need this and need that. And then people say, well, why are your alumni not giving money? Because I went to a PWI, I went to LA Tech, and a lot of the stuff that they built strictly came from alumni donating money. Because they don't, like you said, Tech don't get the money that LSU got. And then even then, you talk about LSU, they got big boosters down there.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things too, is like, okay, how do those schools hire people to tell all these alumni, hey, we need you to just donate something. Anything counts. I think that's one of the things, like, being able to take care of your own, you'll never really have to worry too much about all this other stuff that's going on with the funding, because we already know how the state and everything does when they're supposed to get the funding, and they'll come through with the different presidents, all that crap. So that's just something to look at for them, and maybe that's something they're trying to address with that funding.
Well, one thing I could definitely say about FAMU, I'm part of the FAMU Houston Alumni Association. We definitely do give back. We raise funds. We give scholarships. One thing that I was able to be a part of before we sent students off to school this past year for this semester was we had a send-off where I was able to connect with some of the students that's like in the technology STEM field and, you know, just, you know, have a reference, you know, have someone to talk to if, you know, when that time comes, whether you want to do an internship or you have, you know, just questions about classes or anything else like that. But one thing I definitely do say for FAMU, we definitely do donate and give back, and we do a lot for our school. Some people may say it's a cult, but you know, we just love our HBCU.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. I wish I had something like that. Look, and I'm messing with them talking about the HBCUs not giving back. I ain't gave Tech not 1 cent. I don't plan on it. I would rather find a HBCU or something to give some money to. Tech got enough money and Ruston as it is. All right, so now we're going past school and getting to, you say you're in the corporate world, mm-hmm. you moved to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. What was your first job in Atlanta?
So my first job was a quality assurance analyst. So that was testing code to ensure that the code was could work properly in production. So whoever was the QA analyst for CloudStrike, I feel bad for you, mm-hmm. for real, for real. But yeah, so
who says they even QA'd it?
Look. that's a whole nother story. But yeah, so I started as a quality assurance analyst for a company called CG. I was doing testing for payments, and we were doing was service to, you know, arenas like the Mercedes-Benz stadiums and hotels, okay. and like Hyatt and a couple other companies as well. You know, just provided them the payment software for their point of sale systems.
Okay, cool. You know what? I just thought about it. So you said you, what's the name of the company you said it was?
CG.
CG. So my first role in Dallas was a company called, well, they were purchased by Income, but it's Online Strategies. Mm-hmm. But Income wanted Online Strategies because they had this payment software that they liked and they wanted to mm-hmm. utilize it throughout their company. And Online Strategies specifically was doing this with gift cards,
mm-hmm.
and they were really big with that. And Income is like really big with those payment cards, those gift cards and all those different things, them transactions. And we just testing to make sure that the transactions up, and they start missing them and going down. That's when we got to make stuff an incident. So that was mm-hmm. cool. So how long did you do the QA, and was that your only role in Atlanta, or did you do another role before you moved to Houston?
No. So that wasn't the only role. So, I did quality assurance for 6 months, and then I was approached at that time by my manager, Richard Phillips, real cool guy. He actually ran track for Jamaica in the Olympics as well. He approached me because someone had left, and he approached me. He said, hey, like, I want you to be a part of the operations team, and I want you to, come join the team. We'll, you know, get you to learn, at that time, AWS Cloud Services, customer support, and just learn how to handle on the operations side of the business. So, you know, it was a great opportunity, just be able to learn new skills, you know, improve them upon the resume and go from there. So I did that for almost 2 years. And I moved to Houston back in 2022, because at the beginning of 2022, I started on my journey to once again cybersecurity.
Okay.
And I had watched your videos on like jobs and roles that you could easily transition from where you're working at now to cybersecurity. So I noticed that the role that I was working at now, it didn't have like a lot of transferable skills. So that year I started to like look for jobs, knock analysts or like system admin jobs. And I was just applying to like different places. I was applying to Atlanta, Charlotte, the DMV area, Texas, and, you know, back in Florida too. So I found the role in Houston for a knock analyst, and, you know, I applied, I did the interview. The interview process wasn't that bad. It was, you know, real smooth, real easy. Wasn't that bad. Most of the questions seemed like came from Google. But, you know, they liked me because of my experience with using payments and, you know, obviously working operations and being on call.
Yeah. And I was going to get into that because I was looking at my phone. I was saying, okay. I was trying to figure out when the first time we talked, and we might have even talked before the first consultation, but the first consultation was in June of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go back full circle to that later when I tell people all the time. It's like, I can't promise you no 90 days, 180 days, or nothing. Mm-hmm. I was like, but like, it's going to be better than when we started eventually. So this is like, to be transparent, like, it was almost a year. It might have been 9 months then, if I'm looking at it right.
Yeah. So
almost 9 months with us.
Yeah.
Cool. Now let's talk about the knock job, and in your own words, you can just make it pretty much easy if you want to talk about like what you were responsible for at that role.
Okay. So the day-to-day that role, We just that role just included, Monta Network, making sure that we don't see any type of network spikes or anything else that will cause like a major outage or some type of incident. Mm-hmm. We would like basically make sure that the different sites are able to process credit cards and process gift cards for like the gas or oil companies. So the company I worked for that time, they was in partnership and developed a mobile app for all the different gas and oil companies. So we was basically, the team was basically in charge of making sure that, hey, like when you pull up to this gas pump, this gas location, using this app, it go through and making sure there was no issues. So over there, that's how, you know, I learned how to work on my documentation, work on being on call and working overnight, and also making sure, like, being able to handle incidents either on my own or be able to escalate to the proper channels.
Now, at that role, was there any type of new software that you were introduced to that you didn't use previously?
Yes, yeah, so I was introduced to Azure. So I started using Azure. Eventually, I took the AZ-900 too when I passed that as well. And yeah, just using Azure, using Azure API calls. We also used Datadog. I was introduced to Datadog. I was introduced to what was that one software too as well?
What was it? It was like a monitoring tool or something?
Yeah. Well, Datadog was technically our monitoring tool.
Okay.
Yeah, Datadog was our monitoring tool. And there was another software. But yeah, those are the two main ones I was introduced to, Datadog and Azure.
Okay. Yeah, I know for me, it was, my biggest one was Splunk. That we used in our NOC for monitoring and dashboards. So it's like the biggest one. Then Linux might have been second because we used to do a little bit of stuff in Linux at that role. Now, at this role, that's when me and you finally connect. And I remember we do a consultation. And I remember distinctly talking to you about, okay, hey, do the people at your company know what you want to do career-wise?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, have you asked them, can you volunteer or do anything else that's security-related? And as simple as that sounds, you guys would pretty much find it hard to believe when I talked to so many people that said, no, I didn't ask them. Well, I didn't tell them about what I'm trying to do. And the reason why I suggest that is because, like he did, he was able to get security experience at his current job working on the NOC by showing interest in getting a security. And therefore, when we got to doing his resume, finally, we changed that role from a NOC analyst to a security analyst because he was doing some security analyst type of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really don't matter what it say on work day. It's about what you do on your day-to-day. So talk about that, like how supportive were they of you getting into cybersecurity, doing some of these, you know, I think you was doing like some risk assessments or vulnerability management type things. I can't remember, but you can refresh my mind on that. So how was the company feeling about that?
Yeah, so how I was able to get the shout out of the cybersecurity team, I did a project. I did the Josh Minecore project where he did the Azure where you could
the develop Sentinel some.
Yeah, the Sentinel Lab. We did the Azure Sentinel Lab where, you know, you input threat intel and basically create a honeypot and leave it open and basically collect all the threat intel and have it displayed on your SIM. So I did that project, did a sum up and write up about it, and I posted it on my LinkedIn. And me and the security manager was both connected on LinkedIn, and he seen my LinkedIn post, and he asked me about it, and he was just like, hey, like, I seen, you know, your LinkedIn post looked very much interesting, and, you know, we use Azure Sentinel. If I go and speak to the director and ask him if you could come shadow us and come like learn under us, like, would you be open to it? And I was like, yeah, you know, of course I'd be open to it. You know, I want to get in cybersecurity. I want to, you know, get actual hands-on experience. That was something that I learned too. Like once I was able to shadow a team and actually get the actual hands-on experience, that's when like everything kind of opened up. Like, that's when like the door pretty much like kick open to me on like was actually like cyber and kind of like the training mods and, you know, everything that, you know, like Tri Hat Me and Hat the Boss kind of like sell people on, I was able to see like, okay, what actually correlates and what doesn't correlate into like what I want to do or into what I'm doing right now. So, yeah, my day to day when I started shadow the cybersecurity team, I was, you know, working tickets in the SIM, different alerts, like, you know, alerts for users logging in from different IP addresses of different countries. I did like a risk assessment where like I'll pull the actions of certain cloud users who had admin roles, and then just basically auditing, making sure that everything they're doing is just within compliance, putting that on a spreadsheet, and then just keeping tabs and making sure that nobody has unnecessary access that they shouldn't have. So that was a big thing too. And also I did a kind of like a technical write-up on like the benefits of AI and ingesting AI into like our security environment. So I introduced user and entity behavior. I introduced what else? Different automations, like having, you know, the alerts that come from Sentinel go to Jira, because at the time we was using Jira. So creating tickets and sending to Jira. And also, what was the last one? Creating tickets and sending to Jira. And
that seemed like it was cumbersome, working stuff in Jira.
Yeah, so I basically was doing like a lot, and I was able to learn a lot and just be able to just like just actually get actual hands-on experience that, you know, you said helped me for when I did interview for these different companies, and just, you know, just actually just having the actual frontier knowledge and actually seeing what actually could go on in the day-to-day.
Perfect. And guys, key thing. He posted on his LinkedIn and somebody saw it. And I tell people, for those of you that's trying to get into the industry, you have to figure out how you're going to equalize your skill set and yourself to get some eyes on it. So I was like, every post you make may not blow up, but you never know who sees it. And so the fact that his manager saw it and seen what he was into, look what that led to. It's always about taking the first step, and then you just got to stay consistent at it. Because the other reason why I want people to start, I tell them not to make themselves a content creator, but just market themselves as a person that's interested in the cyber, because the more and more you post, and you post about different things, it's going to help you get more comfortable discussing it when it comes to interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I've always seen that as like the hardest part for people trying to transition, is talking about the things that they learn, because in theory, you're doing it in a lab environment, and it's kind of like, you know, it's giving you steps on how to do it. But that didn't always translate over to knocking out the part in the interview.
Yeah, and one of the things that I did when I started interviewing more is I, you know, created projects just basically out of free thought. So that's another thing that could also help too. Is like when you create these projects and post it on LinkedIn, like take kind of like you said, inspiration from like a guided practice, and then take it and then throw your own spin on it. So like an example of that was when I used Azure Sentinel, and then I adjusted like threat intel from like third party threat intelligence, like
AlienVault.
Yeah.
How fast did you turn it off?
Oh, I turned it off quick.
I forgot. So I made the logic app for AlienVault and forgot to turn it off. I think I ran up $200-$300, $400 like quick. And the crazy thing was, if I would have been paying attention, I could like just remove my card so they couldn't charge me, because they got that money like Debo.
Yeah, I ain't gonna say how I got out of that, because I don't know if they're still watching, but I was able to get out of my bill. Because they will run it up. Like, that's the thing about the cloud environments. Even though like it's kind of like the easiest way to create and do like a lot of cybersecurity projects and get it done, like you said, if you don't turn it off and delete it, yeah, they will definitely keep adding up and adding up, because like you said, it's just all that data that's just, they just keep using every day, and it's just adjusting more and more data, and that's what really drive the bill up.
Yeah, it does. So now, at this time, when you're doing all this stuff, I believe you and I are working together.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what I used to have the parameters on, but I always tell people, like, look, man, just book some. I'm going to work with you. We'll get it together. And so now also what I've been telling people is, hey, I tell them, like, straight up often say, listen, the clients I hear from all the time is, like, I don't want to say bothering me, but we're going to say it's, for lack of better words, bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get better, and they will eventually be successful. The ones I'm have to reach out to all the time and figure out what you're doing and all this other stuff, they may get it eventually, but they have a harder time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, you have a resource, use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember when we got our first, like, interviews or whatever. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like March or April 2023.
You think so? Because I looked at the thing. I know it said it showed a consultation for us in June.
Oh, June. Oh, yeah. So probably like, yeah, probably August.
I could find it. You can talk. I could find it in my email just to double check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I want to talk about, like, the first interview. Yeah, first one was that MSP.
Let's see. Yeah, I think our first time meeting was June 2nd.
Okay.
No. Our first consultation was in May. So you paid like May 31st.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it was. Since that's why you left the stuff on June 2nd.
But we could talk about, like, the like, wanting to, like, do.
Yeah, we're definitely finna get into that, because I think you, that's when we talked, and then you came back to do the coaching stuff, and so I had you do those questions. I had those, like, endless questions at the time. You know, at the time, I don't expect anybody to be good at them, but it's always just for me to gauge where you are, see how you think, and then we have something to build off of, or what I tell people to start going to focus on and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think about everybody online is always telling people how easy, oh, yeah, you know, entry-level sock roll and this and that. And I'm telling people, like, hey, it's a couple of companies that say in 0 to 3 years, but most of the time now, a lot of these companies are trying to automate a lot of that stuff. And so unless they just want early career people, it's going to be tougher. Mm-hmm. And then throw in, if you don't got the complexion for the protection, it's even tougher on you. So you got to do better than what they're looking for sometimes, just to even get the job.
I mean, we was always taught that, though, right?
Yeah, but it at some points you feel like that, but then sometimes you get to work, like, how did they get a job? They don't know nothing, and it's and you're newer than the person. They've been there years, like, why are they here? Or this person been here 5, 10 years and they don't know nothing. Mm-hmm. So you're like, what is the reason for me doing all the stuff I'm doing to get in if y'all are hiring people that don't know nothing? Mm-hmm. We got people that want to get in that know more, but y'all won't hire them because they don't have the right experience. So that's the battle that people like me fight for everybody else, or this and that. Like, even, like, funny thing was, like, I applied for a role at CrowdStrike for, like, a manager role. And it's underneath pretty much my old manager is director there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to the recruiter. And he didn't pull up my stuff. He was like, well, we're going to talk to these other people first, so like they got a little bit more experience that lines our way. And I was like, well, I got something that they don't have. Mm-hmm. And if he would have answered me back, I would say, I directly worked with the director. She know how I work. Yeah. So I was like, regardless of what y'all talking about, she could take what I'm saying for real because she knows the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get that nah, which is cool, whatever. But, like, those are the things, too. Like, you're like, okay, like, this is obviously, like, biasness, like, because everybody who's a sock manager or whatever is not a good manager.
Yeah.
They just happen to been able to get a couple of management titles, and it's easier to keep on getting those same type of roles if you just got the title on your resume.
Yeah, and that's something that I definitely see now, like, kind of like in the cyber world, not bad managers, but kind of like when you have, like, a great amount of experience, and when you, like, a subject matter as something, like, you definitely can keep getting hired for, like, the same role in a different company, or even move up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
But now let's talk about the struggle. We said, so we went from, we can say our journey, we're just going to say the journey started in May. So we're going to say we went from May 2023, and then you got your job offer when?
May 2024.
Yeah, so we went about a year, guys. Yeah. We went about a year. And some people are like, man, it shouldn't take me no year. But I was like, it's a learning process. It takes a lot to get a decent sock roll a lot of times. Sometimes it's like right fit, and then it's just your time. And then sometimes mm-hmm. you got to kind of go through that because you won't be ready for the role when you get it. Like, that's why I tell mm-hmm. people, just keep your resume honest versus lying, because let's say you lie. Let's say I help you pass the interview, mm-hmm. but you fabricated your stuff. I got a client right now who landed a role, and he was like, man, I see what you're talking about right here. They want me to do shadow, like, these people, and then I'll probably be in a queue by whatever week. He said, mm-hmm. so, yeah, you're right. They want you to the ground running. I said, yeah. If there's not, I mean, outside, if you don't, if they know you don't have no experience, then you get the luxury of saying, hey, we're going to train you for 90 days.
Yeah.
When you tell them you tier two, tier three level, but you're not, you're about to probably get a walkthrough of where Confluence is, mm-hmm. hear the tools, and this is how you do this probably all in like 3 days, and then you're going to be in a queue.
Yeah, you got to jump in it.
Sink or swim. And then when you sink, that's when you get fired, and then people know people, and they start talking like, hey, this dude is lying on his resume.
Yeah, you seem bad.
And you got to say, and they'll be able to figure out you got fired, because if they go do the background check and say, can they get rehired, they're going to say no. So it's in the long run, it's not worth it. Like, the instant gratification, it's only a small subset of people who can lie about their experience and pull it off.
Yeah. And for me and my, how I see it is, you know, May 2023, I'm going to be 100% honest, from May 2023 up until now, I don't think I was ready. I don't think I was like 100% ready to handle the complete responsibilities of the role that I have now. So I think like a lot of people who kind of like, you know, they say they want to get in and want to like, you know, do it, get all this money now and whatever. Like, trust me, take a chill pill and keep learning, keep growing, keep progressing. Cause once you in it, you in it. Like, you know, there's no going back. There's no like, oh, like, man, this is like real deal too much for me. Like, no, like pretty much like you said, the consequences are too high to, you know, want to rush into that. So I definitely tell people, like, man, take your time. And that's what anything, just take your time and just, like, let it flow. Like, kind of like you said, right time, right opportunity. You know, working throughout with me throughout the whole year, you definitely know that, like, the other places that I did interview for, you know, I probably could did the job, but the environment probably wouldn't have been the right fit for me, kind of like the environment I'm in now.
Yeah, and as your coach, I could see where you started and then the growth gradually as we got more confidence, as we learned more skills. I could start seeing that pick up and pick up and pick up towards when we got to the end and you landed the role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I tell people too. I was like, if we just put your head down, put the work in, you can change your life. But like, you know, everybody else is telling them you can go from no experience to six figures. Which that only applies to people that got great transferable skills and other roles that probably pay a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any skill set or nothing, you can't sit most of the time. It's exceptions to the rule, but most of the time you're not getting hired anywhere where they're going to pay you a lot of money, because a lot mm-hmm. of places now, they are not asking you stuff you can go find on Google. The questions are scenario based, something that you may not have seen. And so I was telling them earlier about like, assessment I did for an interview and how you got to know your stuff to get through the assessment.
Yeah.
You can't, oh, let me go Google to see if this part of try hack me or something. Nah, you have to know how to mm-hmm. do it. And it's a time limit. It doesn't give you just forever. So it's like 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
like 5-10 questions. And they was in part, short answer. What would you do here for this, for this, for this, for this? If you can't answer it, you're not getting through. CrowdStrike do the same thing.
So you remember, I forgot what company that was, but my first technical assessment, I did it and I completed it. And I'm pretty sure it was right, but like kind of like you said, I took too long. It took me like almost a day and a half to do it.
Was that CrowdStrike?
It wasn't CrowdStrike. It was for another company.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, it took me like a day and a half to do it. Then I took another assessment where it was quicker. I did it like within the day, 24 hours, but I'm pretty sure that the questions wasn't, you know, all the way correct. And then my third assessment, when I did CrowdStrike, you could just, like, to me, I was more confident. I was more confident in my answers. I didn't really Google anything. I was just like, okay, I know what this is. 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 And kind of like you said, as you like improve more, you get more confident and you like, you don't need Google kind of like see it. You kind of just like, oh, okay, I know what this is. I know what this command path lead to. You could look at the file name and you could just tell like, okay, yeah, this file name just look suspicious. So, you know, it may not be completely malicious, but at least you have the train of thought just like it's suspicious.
You know, for sure. And one of the things that I've realized through my career, and sometimes I want y'all to realize, is like everything is a win. Like I have clients that's down because they ain't landed anything yet or whatever. But I was like, hey, we getting interviews. You wasn't even getting that at first. We got recruiters reaching out. You wasn't even getting that at first. You networking, you building your network up. You know, none of this stuff was like this. So you have to learn how to take your wins. And sometimes, hey, you might interview at a CrowdStrike, at a Cloudflare, at whatever these companies, at an Amazon, at a Microsoft. Yeah, you didn't get the role, but you was good enough to make it out of thousands of people that applied and you got the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Take from what you learned from there and apply it to the next role so you can land something. All we got to do is chop at the tree. The tree going to eventually fall, but you got to keep on chopping and not put your axe down. So I remember, and I actually do want to share this too, because I always like to be realistic, and that's why people rock with me and they watch my show.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to right before us probably getting stuff sealed away or whatever, you had an opportunity to get like some easy bread.
Oh, yeah,
for that role.
Yeah.
And the cardinal sin you made was you updated your resume and then put it past me.
Yeah. Because even now working at, and I see now like the stuff that I put on my resume.
That out. I'm gonna beep that out. Actually, I'm gonna go back and do the question over again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to mention it just because of in case they watch it. They probably cool or not, but since we didn't like say, hey, I'm gonna be on this show beforehand or whatever, I just wanna keep you safe from anybody, you know, if they want to go to your LinkedIn, they can see where you work at or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, we could say a light though. So I'm gonna bring it back up. I'm gonna rephrase the question. And so you can just say where I'm working at now. Just keep everything high level as you can, just for, you know, for your safety. But now guys, one of the things I'm always constantly preaching is do not oversell yourself. I've experienced overselling myself and it has not ended well for me. And he did it before with this company, and it didn't work well for him. He had just finished the course on malware analysis, and he put all the stuff he did in that course by TCM on there. And I didn't know it until afterwards. After he did the interview and he recorded himself. And I was telling him, I was like, man, you fixated so much on this new course and stuff you just did, you're not really answering their questions. And that's the thing, too. That's the whole reason why I get us to record our interviews, because, like, even me, if I interview, maybe when I'm going through it, I think, yeah. But when I go back and listen, I was like, that wasn't as strong as I thought it was. Or I shouldn't have said this. I should have said this. So that's one of the easiest ways to get better at interviewing. But what I did not like that they did to you is they knew that you didn't know how to do all that stuff because you was interviewing for an entry-level role. Why was they asking you that? Because I know you weren't going to be doing that on that job.
Yeah. And that's that, I think. Yeah. So, you know, adding just additional things onto the resume is like a mistake I definitely tell people don't do. Definitely keep your resume to like some, keep it to everything you could talk to and you could speak to.
Yeah. It's free game once it's on there.
Yeah.
It's happened to me. Like I got my friend, she redid my resume. I'm so busy doing y'all's and like that thing fire, but they show me like, hey, yo, tell me about this KPI, this metric right here. And if I ain't quick enough, I can't BS the metric. Well, it's not a BS metric, but it's worded in a way that it really stands out. And so I need to have something for that when they ask me that. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you want to limit your bullets to probably some things you really can go into depth on. And that's why, if you notice with my resumes when we do ours, I don't try to overword our resumes. I don't try to make them overly complicated. I try to show as much action as I can and let that speak for itself. And because like I said, I already know when recruiters first see it, 6 to 8 seconds.
But if anything, that interview was kind of like the best thing for me though. Because before I did the interview for the role that I'm at now, and before I did a couple other interviews as well, I had listened to it the night before, and it reminded me of like how I'm playing football. Like, you know, you have a real bad game and you don't want to watch the film.
Gotta watch the film.
But you gotta watch the film. And that's what I took from it. Like, I wasn't, honestly, I wasn't as confident as I was, you know, in the later interviews. I was just like, you know, it just, you could just definitely tell, like, I wouldn't say I felt intimidated by the situation, but I was not as highly as confident as I thought I should have been. So, you know, that it really ticked me off, honestly. Like, that interview, listening back to that interview really ticked me off. And I was just like, yeah, I can't do this again.
And I remember the frustration in your voice when you was talking. I was like, no, it's all right. It happens. But when you get interviews like that, to me, that ain't a good place to be at anyway.
Yeah.
Because you know you asking me stuff that ain't what I'm going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cut the crap. That's typically what they do. Like, I've seen it all. I know when they do it. I know why they do it. I can't prove it, but I know.
And we're going to be 100% honest. Some of the stuff that I put on my resume, I try to talk about, if I could do that, there's no way it should have been an entry-level role. That's like tier two, really tier three, or that's specialist.
It's tier three.
Yeah.
It's tier three. Tier three is the only people that's really going to be analyzing malware like that. Because anybody that's level one, they don't have that amount of time to analyze no malware.
Exactly.
The EDRs did most of that for them already. So, yeah, they were BSing. And also, your interview with, okay, I thought that was something. The interview that time you did with Mr. Paul.
Oh, yeah. The 100 questions from Google.
Yeah, that question, and he wasn't even welcoming. And this is the thing, too. So a lot of times, if y'all see my post on LinkedIn or post on YouTube or something I talk about on a podcast, it's because of I'm saying stuff to y'all that my clients probably can't say or don't want to say. So when I said, hey, interviewers, you need to have the right interviewers for your company. They represent your company. They need to ask better questions. They need to welcome the interviewee,
mm-hmm.
the applicant, and they don't. And that could be like a bad look to where everybody say, hey, don't interview them. They don't want you to work there. Like, it definitely, you know, you dodged the bullet because like all of them got laid off.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, that company is not doing good right now.
Oh. Yeah, kind of like I tell people, man, like you said, it's perfect timing and perfect place because I listen, the place I'm at now, like, is real the perfect place. And we could definitely going to get more into that.
We're going to get into it.
Yeah.
Like, for me, what's funny about the situation we're talking about with the people got laid off, it's not funny that they got laid off. I want them to find something else.
Mm-hmm.
But what's ironic is Texas Instruments did me like that years ago.
Mm.
And I was so mad because I was unemployed and I was looking for another job. And I really wanted because I needed a job. Just for in a couple of weeks, I ended up getting a better offer for Optiv. Mm. And the guy from that same company, from Texas Instruments, came and was like, yo, you dodged the bullet. They don't know what they're doing. They hire somebody, they don't know what they're doing. And this is all the crap that's going on. And they're underpaying people.
Mm.
So when you're going through it, it don't seem like it's fair and it's going your way. You're down on yourself. You're mad. Like, what did I do wrong? But a lot of times, it wasn't supposed to work out for you no way. You just got to let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever it's supposed to be for you is going to be for you. And so that's what I feel like happened with where you're at now. I also always tell people, like, hey, not only when you work with me, I'm helping you with this, but now as an extension of me, you get access to my immense network that I've made over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular company is so solid because I still keep in contact with them every so often. Just to see what's going on, how they doing, how's their kid doing, what's going on at the company.
Mm-hmm.
And they always reach out to me. They reach out to me and say, hey, do I know anybody? And I sent them a couple of people. Now, I knew out of what I sent, I knew you were going to probably be the person that at least got the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But I still was trying to help that other person at the time, too. And what also did help is, hey, I was able to help prepare you because I remember like what they may ask and then things that I've put on my own questions to help mm-hmm. you just address. So I forgot what you did when you did your first interview, but I was like, they were like so ecstatic. Like they was updating me like, hey, he's going to the next round. Like that, yeah. Like that type of stuff. And I also wanted you to talk to them because of, I had such a positive experience with that whole process. I don't mind telling people to go apply at places I had good processes at. Like that place, mm-hmm. that company was a good one. Microsoft had a very good interview experience for me. I'm trying to see who else has some. There's some other people that probably have some really good ones. I haven't. But those two were like the top two and not two. So with that being said, when you went through that and then I think I forgot which one was it. I think you had like your I forgot what is it called when you have like your certain amount of interviews and they spread out like over the week. I forgot what it's actually called.
I think it's like a panel. Panel.
Well, it's not a panel because like you'll do them in twos.
Oh yeah, twos. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
So, like it, technically, it's like you got stage one. You might talk to well stage one, screening. Stage two, director. Stage three is going to be two or three different interviews. They're going to be like an hour on different days.
Yeah.
So like, and then that's how like that's typically how it goes. And so you know you're talking about that and. We just brush back up all the stuff, and I think you go back and do the questions, and I'll say much better. And now that's when we get into the details. I'm like, I say the devil's in the details of trying to land a sock roll, and it's also how do we stand out? How do we do small things that help stand out? And remember, you told me this verbatim was like, they ask you a question, and you were one of the only people that said, well, first, I want to make sure this is actually malicious or not.
Yes. So... The like you kind of like you said, stage one. Stage one was interview the manager that I have now, and you know it was. I definitely give credit to that company and how they interview. Every interview that I had with them, they started the same way. It was just like, hey, this is not a grill session. We're not trying to cook you, see what you don't know, or we're not trying to tack on points and say, hey, you don't know this or this, that, whatever. They just real deal want to see my thought process, see how I think through problems, see, you know, kind of like I said, like, you know, is this actually malicious? Confirm if, like, this is actually going to be an issue or situation and just carry on from there. So the first interview that I did with my current manager, it actually went very well. You know, had a great time and, a tip that I did that really helped me, that made me more confident is, like, I have a standing desk. So all the interviews I did standing up. You know, it helps me think on my feet, help me be more clear thinking. And, you know, it helps me speak and talk about, you know, what I'm talking about while I'm on the interviews and when answering the questions. So when I did the first set of interviews, it actually went very well, you know. A lot of interview questions were questions that you gave me from the training. Some of the interview questions I did, you know, I had to sit down. When I sit down, I had to really think about it and think about the process and think about the theory of like what to actually do and then actually just, you know, think about it and have a response for it. So that was stage one. Stage two for me was the actual team members on the team. I was able to interview both the team members on the team and kind of like the same thing. One of the things that we talk about, one of the team members, he had told me, he was just like, man, he appreciated my thought process. He appreciated how I just, you know, when I answered the questions, it was more so just me thinking through the question and going through like, you know, every possibility and see, and even asking them the right questions too. Because sometimes interviews will give you an open-ended question to see if, like, okay, is this person just going to give me, like, the most easiest direct answer? Right. Or are they actually going to sit there and question me?
Yeah. I messed up on one of those one time in the Microsoft interview. Mm-hmm. And I went right into the answer. I said, I should have asked for this. And he even told me at the end, I said, I should have asked for that. Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is, like, I teach self-awareness. Self-awareness will let you know a lot. Like, I pulled away from the interview, like, I didn't do enough to get it. Like, if they just wanted to hire me by miraculous no reason, by all means, yes. But I was like, I knew the things I didn't do the best on. I knew what I was weak on at that time. And, you know, that's what showed in the feedback when a friend, like, we looked at the feedback of, like, from that thing. But for you, that's why I think before everything, I was like, yo, let me see the questions you're going to ask them. Because that's how you... That's how they see, like, who's engaged, who's preparing, who actually wants to work here. Like I said, you probably asked a lot of better questions than some of the other people did.
Yeah, definitely did. One of the questions that I had asked my final rounds when I was speaking to the directors was if I was offered a role, Oh, I can't. I ain't gonna ask a question. I remember I sent it to you, and you was just like, "That was a great question." But I really asked them a question that, you know, they had to be like upfront and honest with. It was just like, you know, overall my. It was just basically tell my interview performances and just like, where do you see me going from this role?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, that was a real great question to ask. And he was saying that, you know, and they had to be, you know, honest. Sometimes, you know, when you ask these questions back to the interviewers, because you kind of do want to know like whether you're a fit for their team as well. Obviously, you know, my team really liked me. Because, you know, I asked questions, I had the drive to want to actually pursue more. Like, I didn't want to just come in the role and just say, hey, I'm in cybersecurity and, you know, I'm not really doing anything. And like here at this role, I get to like do so many different things. And it came from just being that interview and then just like letting them know, like all the extra projects that I did, all the extracurricular things, the things I do, like volunteering and stuff like that. You know, I just sell myself. I just really sell myself to the highest bidder.
It's a selling process.
Yeah.
That's the one part a lot of people not getting. It's like, that's why we got to get you comfortable with talking about your wins, your losses. One thing that I used to have an issue preparing for this now, because it's one thing you don't think about. Sometimes an interviewer say, hey, well, tell me about a time you made a mistake or you did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, we so geared on we do everything right, we have not prepared for those questions. And that's another one now. Like, I kind of revamped a little bit of some of the stuff I was doing with you. So, like, I got, like, a whole list of different questions people can ask and based on what their job title might be and some stuff that I was told to ask, like, in interviews, say, hey, you know, next time you interview, ask about, like, what your performance will look like at this role and how you be grading on that in a year and how would you promote, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Like all those different things, they do help out. So like my goal is, like I said, even if I don't get denied, if we still have an enjoyable interview, that network is open now. I've had times where I didn't get the job. The director spins the block like, yo, we want to offer you last year. We got this role coming open. Come back and interview. Let's see if you're a good fit for this one. Like, so sometimes you just never know.
Mm.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I do want to touch on is networking. So even while I was interviewed for the company that I'm at now, I had reached out in my network and interviewed for a couple of roles for P&G.
I remember that.
Yeah. And that was through my alumni association. That was through a friend. She works for P&G as well. She does cybersecurity as well. And she just put me on to like one of the recruiters that recruit for FAMU. And then we was able to like, you know, have like a list of roles that, you know, that would
might fit you.
Yeah, may fit me. One of the roles that I did interview for was for the plant. For the plant managers, like the cybersecurity manager at the one day processing plant. Yeah. My skill set didn't fit into like the role, but I had a great time interviewing with the director and it really enjoyed me. And he, you know, recommended me for roles that fit into my skill set.
Right.
So, kind of like you said, when you have like great interviews and like you're not the person who, you know, they feel like, and when you do interviews, you got to make sure that, one, you leave an impression, but also, two, you got to make sure they don't feel like they waste their time. Because you did talk about that, too, about how, like, man, you do certain interviews and you feel like your time was wasted. So that's a big thing, too, is not to make sure that, you know, nobody feel like their time was wasted.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that a couple of times with interviews. I'm like, you're wasting my time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you busy, I'm busy. I don't have time. I move stuff around and talk to y'all. So, yeah, man, definitely. Now, I do briefly want to talk about, now, technically, at the knock role, you did cyber, but that was your title in HR. Mm-hmm. You're pretty much more like a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So, now that you are remote, and what's your official title?
So I'm part of the fire team, which is forensic incident response engineer. Yeah.
All right. So this is your first role doing that. In your own words, and you can take as much time you want to think about it. How does it finally feel to have an actual? Well, you ain't on. You're not on Twitter, but my my Twitter followers there get this joke. How does it feel to be a cybersecurity?
It's actually exciting. Like, it's very, like, it's so exciting. You know, ever since I started the role and ever since, like, I do the day-to-day, like, it's just super exciting. Like, how you say this? Like, sorry. Like, when we get those tickets in the queue and we begin, like, you know, all these different alerts and stuff like that, yeah, it could seem overwhelming a bit, but, like, once I go through it and once I, you know, go through it, put my hands on it, or whatever, and say it's like something like completely brand new that I probably never even thought of. And that's one thing I definitely do want to give credit. Like, y'all threat actors, y'all, listen, y'all, how y'all be moving around, y'all be doing y'all work, listen, man, y'all keep me on my toes. But I definitely enjoyed the process of just learning new things and just, you know, applying myself. I feel like this is a role and an opportunity where I could completely apply myself, and I feel like I'm getting the best out of myself. It's not like I'm going in here and just doing something, you know, very remedial, something that anybody else could do. Like, I really feel like, you know, I'm making a difference. I'm learning things at a pace and doing things that, like, a lot of people obviously want to do, but not a lot of people can do.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, too, is, like, well, when it's something new, if it's something that, you know, you worked on a lot of times, it's okay. But that new stuff, okay, I got a lot of questions for you because you're new. And granted, I know you hadn't did any things alone, but I think it's always good to talk to, like, the new kids on the block and to show the people that's watching that's looking to be you pretty soon about maybe what they can expect. So I guess I'll ask you what two things. Well, one, what tools now have you been introduced to that you didn't maybe have experience with beforehand?
EDRs, definitely EDR tool. Because of the fact that, like, you can't purchase an EDR tool that's like, well, you can't purchase a commercial EDR tool that you'll see on a day-to-day environment. So actually getting, like, actual hands-on experience on, like, a real prod environment EDR tool, and learning the different functionalities and how, pretty much like you said, like, it pretty much give you, I wouldn't say give you the answer, it give you hints on how to investigate, you know, these different alerts that come in and how, you know, you work and function the tool to see what evidence can you gather that you can add to your investigation to either confirm it's a false positive or true positive. And then once you do, you know, once you confirm it's a true positive, then that's when you'll, you know, go through the incident response process and go through, you know, your SOPs and go forward from there.
Yeah. Would you say y'all also are dealing with, like, for example, I can't remember if I said this earlier or maybe it's before we actually intro, but for example, like, you get your EDRs, you're dealing with data loss prevention now.
Yeah. Insider threats.
So are y'all using, and since nobody knows who you work, are y'all using like Purview or something like that? For that,
Purview, no, it's actually, so they actually have like a custom alert now for our SIM and also our EDR to, you know, log whenever we have like certain types of DLPs, and also we're looking at.
Because I know, like, most places, like, use Proofpoint. So I'm assuming, like, y'all probably use Proofpoint. Or,
probably.
Or Mimecast or, what else? Of course, y'all are in the the cloud. So probably AWS more now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Probably still got some Azure there or maybe some GCP there, but AWS may be the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, probably like some type of tool like that uses, helps you pretty much aggregate cloud alerts. So like
use Guard Duty.
Well, Guard Duty is like you can do it through Guard Duty, but Guard Duty is like one set of alerts that's typically a lot of times triggered a lot from like CloudTrail, some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, there are tools like Palo Alto Prisma, Wiz, where they take all the information and they enhance it. They enrich the data, makes it a little bit more better versus having like a lot of that stuff come into like the SIM. It can get noisy. So you can like do, it's like a tool. So similar to the EDR, you got the signals from the EDR with the endpoints, the alerts come through, and then they go through the SIM based on what you had in your correlation search for you to go look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's similar like how Wiz or Prisma works. And I would probably, probably do got something like that. I would probably suggest like looking into it because like a brilliant tool because it does a better job at showing like the history and the correlations of what's happening. Because that's one of the biggest things, too, that you're probably finding out now is when you go into a new environment, knowing your network.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing you can think about. It's like, okay, how do I make sure I don't run around like a chicken with my head cut off? Because like, that's what you probably, I'm pretty sure your first day in the sim, you're like, oh, this is bad. I'm finna go look at this.
Mm-mm. So the one of the things I did, and they did a very good job too with the training, was showing me pretty much what is normal, what is normal, what is not normal. And kind of like also one of the tips that I took from our training was like whenever we get a new alert, I would let, you know, people who work on the team kind of work their alerts and stuff like that. And then I look at their notes. I look at their notes and then I look at, you know, previous alerts and look at their notes and see like, okay, this is okay. So this is how they investigate, and this is how the information that they're looking at to confirm whether it's a true or false positive. So that was something that I did, that I took from you, was just like, look at all the previous alerts, look at what's on normal, see how they handle their investigations and everything else. And then you take that information, and once you pretty much start doing what you're doing, you go from there. For me, I started picking up alerts and tickets my second week. First week, sit back, notice, read the room, kind of just be a fly on the wall for the different projects and stuff like that, and then kind of like get an overview of all the tools and see, what tools work, see what don't work. But that second week is when I, threw myself in the fire. Like I was picking up tickets, applying the different investigation skills that I was able to get, one from the training, but also two, get from reading previous alerts and previous instances, and then just, gather as much evidence as I can, and then, reaching out to teammates and then reaching out to them and kind of just asking them, like, hey, like, based on the evidence that I have, like, thumbs up, thumbs down. And, that was kind of like some of the feedback that I got early on was like, like, we're glad that you're, throwing yourself out there. We're glad that you're actually reaching out to the teammates. And, one thing that I did a good job at is, I reached out to everyone on the team. Like, I reached out to different teammates, just get a connection with them, get an understanding of them. And, eventually, as, like, time went on, they started bringing me on to different projects, allowing me to, do different things that, other places a tier one wouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole reason why I wanted you to get there. Cause I was like, technically you would be a level one, but you're not going to be boxed in as a level one.
Mm-hmm.
And so now comes on to my question is, and you don't have to talk about specifics, but have you been involved in or been able to shadow any incidents?
Yes. So I was able to shadow and be involved in a couple of incidents. Since the second week, honestly. Like,
how cool was that process for you?
Oh, it was great. Like, it was great, like, going through, like, I felt like it's like being like an investigator. It's like going through all the processes, finding different evidence, finding different things that would confirm, okay. And then also, like, going through all the laws, backtracking the laws to see, you know, network connections, file paths, just previous history mm-hmm. of this user, see if, you know, anything malicious or anything going on with them. So, you know, since the second week, I kind of just been picking up things. I mean, shoot, one of the things that I picked up actually turned out to be an incident. So it was just like, you know, but it came along with the process and it came right on time.
Yeah, man. So did you see, I think one of the more interesting things that people don't pay attention to is that big old incident summary that you got to send out or whoever's the incident commander. Mm-hmm. Like how you've been learning about like the different teams that you got to loop into and how important it is. Like a lot of people don't know until they work IR how important it is to have assets managed correctly, like labeled mm-hmm. correctly, who to reach out to. Because think about it, if it's a server that belongs to a certain team and whether it's, you know, they need for business operations or not, you need to talk to the right person. Like, hey, we finna, you know, contain this thing. You know, it's infected, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring your IT people in on this too. You found out all that stuff. And doing IR, you get to meet so many different stakeholders.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times those incidents get a lot of visibility and they weigh up and people get to know who you are before you even like, you know, you've been there a long enough time. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. It helps you out. Okay. Now you're sitting back in the call and you're learning, okay, this is how I present an incident and talk about it. This is how I chronicleize it and send out the incident report,
mm-hmm.
you know, or also, hey, because I'm pretty sure if it hadn't happened yet, it will happen. They're going to let you type it up and then you got to send it to like your manager or whatever. They're going to review it, see mm-hmm. how good it is or not. And then, you know, you'll send it off.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, I've just been reviewing people's type up, reviewing like the documents and stuff like that and the evidence sheet, and just basically getting an idea of like, you know, whenever you do lead the incident, what you have to put on there, who you have to reach out to, and also involving the different teams. Since, like I said, since like that second week, I've been getting to know all the different teams because, you know, I either put myself out there, they just bring me into like these different incidents and different projects that they're just working on. And, you know, you just, you know, get a chance to shake hands and get to know people who, you know, do all different types of things. Like this was actually the first company that I since joined that's like a bigger company. Most of my companies that I worked at was either a startup or was acquired by another major company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wasn't, we didn't have like a large office base in the location of the city we was at. So now, like, working for, like, a bigger name company and having to work with just so many people and on a day-to-day and just integrating yourself, like, kind of like you said, with different teams and different project holders and stakeholders and, you know, it's just, like, a different ball game.
Yeah, man. So are you working on, like, any certifications? Do they got any type of progression plan for you on, like, what they want you to be baseline-wise?
Yes. So planning on taking more certs in terms of just like probably getting to those SANS courses. Got a better understanding and I'm going to go into those SANS courses. I'm going to go into AWS, get into cloud learning too as well, cloud security, cloud learning, and also one of the courses that I took a look at too is probably go through like TCM too as well.
Yeah. I know they actually just did a SOC course too. So that'll be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's some fun stuff, man. I think I can't remember if you left me like a video testimony or not. Cause what you don't know is like, so I'm working on a new site and I probably could show you this afterwards.
Okay.
But it got like different testimonials. So I got like your picture on there. I haven't released it yet, but,
okay.
It eventually will be out there. So, it's not scripted. As a matter of fact, I think he called me or texted me the other day, like, yo, what questions can I ask him? I said, don't worry about it. It's going to be a conversation.
Okay.
Now, briefly, man, how was it to work with me as a career coach?
Oh, so I definitely say, like, working with you as a career coach, it definitely was a blessing because I feel like a lot of people really don't know what they're doing out there. Like, it's so, like, kind of like you said, it's so many people telling you how to actually, like, you know, you could get in this certain amount of time and this and that, whatever. And, you know, I've been around the tech game for a while. I understand that things take time. Like, nobody got into where they was at overnight. So, you know, I was just looking for somebody, one, who looked like me, and also two, who's kind of like familiar with the process, who been through, you know, been through the game. And also another thing was too, I was, you know, watching your channel, your YouTube channel for a couple of years, you talking about your journey, going through, you know, working these different cybersecurity roles, how you help these different people. So, you know, it wasn't just like, okay, I, you know, just took your word for it. I did the research. I, you know, obviously used the free ways to try to put myself into like a cybersecurity role. But obviously, you know, I made the investment, and that's how I see it. I see it as an investment, not a bill. I definitely would recommend, you know, people, if you're in a spot where you could invest in your career to make a gain, then definitely, working with you has been a plus. So far, overall in my tech career, since I started 5 years ago, with this new role, my salary increased to like $24,000. No, not 24, 29,000 since when I first started in IT. Yeah, it's not the six figures, but it's definitely in a better place, I mean, and it's more comfortable.
But you're super close to six figures, though.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not complaining about it. It's just, you know, obviously, whenever the next jump happens, it's going to happen. You know, I just got to make sure I'm prepared. Kind of like what Kodak said, you know, when you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you said that piece about, well, first of all, thank you for the kind words about being a career coach for you. I do enjoy it. I do. Like I said, I'm working on, like it's been a couple of people I've helped you out getting the first blue team role. So I'm actually working on developing something strictly just for that. Mm-hmm. Just so it's like, hey, if you got offered a SOC role today, in 2 weeks, you'd be ready to start the job. But I'm also happy that you were honest about like your salary, what your increase has been over the last 5 years. Because I tell people all the time, we know the statistics, we got the metrics. If you pull it up right now and I was to pull up, hey, what's the average salary in America? It's going to be like $30,000 or $40,000 something for like black males or something. It's not that mm-hmm. high. And he's making well above that. Everybody who's acting like they're making all this money on social media, a lot of times they're lying to you, or the way that they're making money is they're selling their courses and stuff to you. So keep that in mind. When something always seems like it's too good to be true, a lot of times it is. A lot of times you're the reason why they're making the money that they make. And there's nothing wrong with people charging for their time or experience, but it just needs to make sense. You know, I can't always guarantee great return on investments. Now, they happen because I'm like that, but I can't guarantee it because I'm not the person hiring. So that's the only way I could make guarantees if I'm hiring people. And one of the things I think I want to eventually do is figure out how to, whether I make it and it'd probably be a different thing. I'm thinking about offering like a free internship or something that I need to write out with my company for some of y'all that need experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because, so this is an end of an ad, but for Level Careers, Josh also has a free internship that you can do with his company.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about that is for the people who always think you can lie on your resume and companies don't verify where you work, one of my clients actually did the internship with Josh. And they send them an email to verify. Josh verified, hey, he did work here. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a way that I can legitimize your experience by saying, hey, you did these things with me. And now we can say you got some more experience on there. So that's something I'm looking to implement soon. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to have them do, or at least do on their own, so we can say they got some experience or whatever.
Another way I feel like people could gain experience, I did talk about earlier, was taking these courses and stuff like that, and just making your own spin on these courses, like creating your own little projects from it. Kind of like you said, man, there's a lot of free, services, you know, Ubuntu free, Linux free, Kali Linux is free, but just taking it and putting your own spin on it, I felt like that was like something that really benefited me, because yeah, I could talk about it from like a perspective of like, okay, this is what they offer for the course. But if I talk about it in a different way and like, hey, like, yeah, I went above beyond and I was able to learn these skills and actually how to add and input these things. So, you know, that's definitely, I say it's a major benefit is, you know, creating your own project and making sure you're doing it safe. Also, too, just giving yourself the time and grace. Giving yourself grace. Because I feel like a lot of people don't give themselves grace when on this job hunt or, like, trying to transition to, like, another role. Kind of like you said, like, you know, you're interviewing. You're actually getting an interview. You're actually getting callbacks. You're actually, you know, gaining. And one of the things that I say, like, working with you was that whole year, we was interviewing the whole year. We was interviewing the whole year. We was getting callbacks the whole year and stuff like that compared to almost 2 years of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. To piggyback off what you were talking about, number one, the next other stuff I'm working on is, okay, how do I help people? They did all these things in these courses. How do we tie it together to be a project that also showcases, like, you know what you're doing? Because, see, it's a lot of things you can say, like I said, Cali and also is free, but a lot of people don't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
Like, for example, you threw Alien Vault in there. I did, when I had my Sentinel environment still up, open, I learned how to forward my CloudTrail logs to Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start doing stuff like that, so because you know this from being entry level, and they ask me this sometimes, I say, do you have a home lab? So then I say, yeah, I got a home lab, and I forward all these logs open. I've used this open source thing to be this email gateway so I could send phishing messages, and I've did this stuff with MFA, and I made some of these alerts. Like, I found, like, security logs that you can send to the SIM too, so you can just work on, like, doing queries and making, like, maybe some detections out of it. But those are the things now that people have to figure out how to do, because, you know, now, of course, a lot of people are doing the same courses. Mm-hmm. Like you said, how do you make them look different? And that's why we cover the news. And so you see who these threat actors are, and they'll kind of show you about these attacks and figure out what you can do about this. Write up threat intelligence reports or something. You guys got to do something to stick out. But that effort that you're putting into it, whether it's right or wrong, will go a long way.
Definitely.
And for the interviews, I just tell people, hey, simple solutions, yet they remain effective. Like I said, if you're getting all this information from everywhere else, you just got to make sure, like, are you even listening to the person that's working in the field that they're trying to help you get into?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one I've seen. That's why a lot of times when people are asking me, like, certain things about project management, all these roles, I can do your resume, but I'd rather send you to somebody else that they help people do better than other technical gigs. And I focus on, like, what I know the best, and we help people like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely do agree. But yeah, man, kind of like I said, man, I honestly, I thank God every day for it. You know, for this process and this blessing, because it was a lot. It was a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money that went into it. But, you know, it was an investment.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen the fruits of my labor, and I definitely see, like, kind of like where I see myself in the next level now.
Yeah.
Kind of like before, I didn't know where I would be next in terms of the next role or, like, the next opportunity, but now I definitely do see it. You know, just getting all this experience I'm getting now.
No, for sure. And that's the crazy thing is, like, your career really is just starting.
Yeah.
Like, it's only going to get better. You're only going to learn more. You're only going to work with, like, smarter people. So my advice is, like, for you is, hey, if you've not, you probably already noticed whoever the smartest person on your team is or who the most talented is, get right up under them. Like, learn as much as you can from them.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you complete, whether big or small, start writing it down on your brag sheet. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be your things to where when it comes to try to talk about promotions, getting your money, your raise, talk about them. If y'all do stuff in Agile or Jira, make sure you notate them things in Jira. So at the end of the year, you got all the things you closed out in Jira or projects you worked on. Volunteer for all you're going to be having from the shift you told me you're going to be doing, you're going to have a lot of free time.
Oh, yeah.
So volunteer to fix a lot of that stuff. You're going to be surprised to where, like, hey, we need to bring them during the week. And then that's when you really start getting that visibility and just learn how to brag on yourself. And, like, those are some simple things. I mean, if you want to see it in a more detailed format, go to my LinkedIn Advanced Cybersecurity Career Course.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right there. It's meant just for that, for people like him it's meant to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely the shift I'm working, man. It's an opportunity to just like sit and learn, but also just like, man, you got so much free time to do like so many free projects that they either can't do during the middle of the week, or you could just, you know, create something. And that's also another thing too, working at this company with this team, I could create a project and just say, hey, okay, I'm gonna create this project, and then, you know, I'm gonna apply it to the environment, see if I see anything. If I don't see anything, cool. But if I do see something, catch something, obviously, you know, that's something worth spending up and actually reaching out to management. And kind of like you said, that's something that, you know, they could see too. It's like, okay, he's working, you know, not during the day shift, but he's able to find things that, you know, that could apply to us. So, yeah.
Perfect, man. Now, listen, guys, unlike other people, my guests got real names and they work at real places. Where can the listeners and the watchers, where can they keep up with you at?
Sure. So you can keep up with me on LinkedIn, you know, Joshua Addison. And social media, you can follow me at it's just Josh_72. I'm getting back into my YouTube channel. You know, I created a YouTube channel so I could display my cybersecurity projects and different things that I did on there to like kind of like, you know, displaying it in interviews. Yeah, a nice little portfolio. So I'm going to get back into my work portfolio. Definitely taking, you know, different ideas that I see at work from, you know, threat intelligence newsfeed and create more projects so I could just send it out there and then just have that post it so people could just, you know, use it for ideas and whenever they create their next project, or use it to create your own project. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely get back into my work portfolio, YouTube and thing, and just go from there. But yeah, I'm not gonna be like those influencers and whatever. Like, you know, I'm gonna be chilling.
Yeah, what they say on Batman, you live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
Look, man, yeah, I can't be an influencer. I'd be chilling too hard.
And I gotta ask this for the ladies, because they be wanting to ask when I have the women on here. You know, are you taking?
Right now, I'm in a particular situation where I'm seeing somebody.
But like, okay, are you engaged?
Nah.
All right, ladies, he is not engaged. So, hey, you know, God might have told you you're supposed to be his wife. So. That's all I'm going to say, but...
Nah, don't throw that discernment on me. Listen, pray about something.
You never know. But nah, I'm just joking. But I appreciate everybody for tuning in with us. Y'all really been helping the channel out. Y'all been supporting every way in the best way that y'all can. But like I always say, until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.